It's Newsmakers on Wisconsin Public Radio. Thank you very much for tuning in. I'm Ezra Wall. Here during our election season, we've been focusing on the races for State Senate and State Assembly in our listening area. And today's focus turns to the 70th State Assembly District, which will feature a race between the incumbent Republican Nancy Vandermeer and the challenger Democrat John Baldus, who joins us now. Mr. Baldus, thank you very much for joining us.
Well, thank you for having me. I genuinely appreciate the opportunity to take questions and address the constituents of the 70th Assembly District.
And your district is a pretty big one, and you can fill in details that I'm missing here, but I think I saw your district overlapping in parts of Monroe County, Jackson County, Wood, and Portage, and including the towns, cities, villages, etc. of parts of the Sparta, Toma area, Warrens, City Point, Junction City, and so on. Am I just about right on the geographical footprint there?
Yeah. As you come up from Warrens, we move up towards Arpen, and then up to the Portage County, Marathon County line, up and around Wisconsin Rapids, and then loops in a small section of the town of Hull, which is where I live.
And so part of your district sit right outside of Wisconsin Rapids. Part of it will sit right outside of Stevens Point, although not encompassing those cities necessarily.
Yeah, no, correct. And then it also includes Nacoosa and areas in between, such as Pittsville.
So tell people about yourself who might not know you. What do you do? What makes you tick? What have your experiences been, and why you kind of wanted to run for office?
Well, that can be a long story. That can be a short story.
Well, we've got 25 minutes, however you want to spend it.
Right. I'm looking at a picture of my dad. You know, my father, Alvin Baldus, is a former state representative and U.S. congressman from the state of Wisconsin. A long-told story around the dinner table is that my dad won his first election in 1966 by 15 votes, and that was on the third recount. And so I've been very fortunate to have the family that I do have, who's been passionate about policy, about listening to the voices of the constituents and working for the constituents. And I haven't been involved in politics in the last 4 years, having been born on the campaign trail in 1974 to today. We've always had issues that we've been concerned about and engaged with. And for me, as we came into this year, watching what was happening with the pandemic, the leadership at the federal level, and the leadership at the state level, and ultimately the lack of conversation between the governor and the legislative majority, was a little upsetting for me, because I see it from a perspective of resources. We have resources at the local levels that don't match what we have at the state level, and don't match what we have at the federal level. But yet here in the state, where this year the pandemic was left to the states by the federal government, our state legislature decided to sue the governor and not have conversation. And for us, conversation has always been part about legislating. My dad used to talk about back in the old days how they would argue on the floor of the assembly, but then they'd go across the street and, you know, they'd be singing together and around the piano, and one of their friends would be on the piano and just having a good time and genuine relationships. And that's something that I think we've lost here in the state and across the nation, as you look at the divisiveness sometimes that you get around politics. And so my family has always worked to generate a positive attitude, and that's kind of what drew me to this race. With not having somebody anybody running against my opponent, seeing at the last two elections, she won by large, 60 plus percent. Those are hard things to overcome. And in a democracy where being held accountable to the voters, your constituents, and going back to that story of my dad winning his first election by 15 votes, to me, it's getting back to to fair maps, and that's what I've been running on. I see it as an opportunity to provide back to my kids and to my community, to bring the message of fair maps to this race.
You mentioned one issue there, fair maps, which has to do with redistricting or apportionment, or however you want to say it. You obviously that's an issue that some people would think about, but may not seem directly impactful to people. What are some of those other issues that you are running on that might be more tangible examples of things that people are concerned about?
Sure. Access to healthcare is an important issue to me. Affordable health care. As we went into this pandemic, we saw the president not open up the ACA for individuals that have been laid off, who no longer have the opportunity to get affordable health care. To me, going back to 2010 or 2011, when we decided not to take the $350 million from the federal government to help expand Medicaid, Medicare in the state. Can we expand Badger Care? Can we expand senior care here in the state to be able to provide for our citizens to have that option there on the table, not to compete or to actually compete in the marketplace with traditional insurance types, but to have that option for our citizens in the state? Can we help lower the eligibility age for senior care so that those seniors that see the end of the light, that know that they've saved and they've fought to get to retirement? Can we lower that age for senior care so that those seniors can enter retirement a little sooner, so that they can take, because our state is a manufacturing state. We're number one, number two, you know, we're in the top 10 consistently in manufacturing per capita, as well as our dairy state. There's a number of things that we can do to help alleviate some of the stresses that our citizens have just by being able to offer health insurance package. And for those small business owners that are struggling during this pandemic that need to focus on sustaining their business and maintaining it and trying to grow it, then you have the overriding cost of healthcare to be able to provide for their employees, or their small manufacturers here in the state that want to continue to work to grow their base, but are working to keep their employees employed, to keep them on the job. Can we work with those small manufacturers to help offer a package that can help alleviate some of those stresses that allows them to compete in the marketplace more successfully? Some of the other issues, education. I have my son, he's going to be in his senior year at Spash. My daughter, she's going into her eighth grade year in the Stevens Point Area High School. What are we doing to prepare our school districts for this pandemic? How has the state tried to help prepare our individual school districts so that they can successfully complete an academic year in the age of this pandemic? We have seen very little action from the legislative majority. The last time they reconvened was back in February, and they had some bills that they were able to push forward through a legislative cycle or through a few meetings that they did through Zoom, but nothing since then. You know, as we look and we just heard that Speaker Boss Senate Majority Leader Fitzgerald will join the special session. I don't know if Speaker Voss has said that the Assembly is going to convene as well. But you know, the social injustices that we have today, accountability. We all know that we support the police. The rhetoric that we see of defunding police is a talking point that is used to put a wedge in between citizens here. I don't know many people that are actually saying we're going to defund police. No. Can we, are there actions that we can do to create a better environment where, as Eugene Robertson said yesterday, when does the color of my skin is no longer a weapon? And that's editorialist for the Washington Post. So yeah, there's a number of issues beyond fair maps, but a lot of it comes back to as we have legislative districts in the state, they're divided so well by how they did the redistricting that you end up having an election where you almost don't have an opponent because your margin of victory is so large and it's so hard to overcome that you're not held accountable to the voters.
And nationwide, and no matter who is in charge, it seems like you see this a lot across the country. It's maps are drawn seemingly to protect incumbents and to make sure that everybody always gets the votes that they've always counted on. What would you do differently? How could Wisconsin have a different approach to drawing those districts after this 2020 census is over?
Well, I believe we follow the Iowa model. Governor Evers has announced his nonpartisan commission to draw new legislative maps. We put it in the hands of individuals that understand how to read where the populations are and where the population growth is going to be, and we don't take into consideration political affiliations. I think what served the citizens of Iowa very well, I think for the past 40 years, could serve our state just as well. And you're right, it has been done. You know, states like Maryland, Massachusetts, Wisconsin, Indiana, where you have legislative maps that are drawn in a way that supports incumbency. And I think we need to be able to move away from that. And what Iowa has is a very honest, straightforward solution to creating fair maps. And I think it served the state very well. I think it served us well as well.
We're talking to John Baldus, who is the Democratic candidate for state assembly in the 70th district. He will face the incumbent, Republican Nancy Vandermeer, in the election on Tuesday, November 3rd. Our conversation continues in just a moment. For now, if you'd like to check out more of the political coverage that we've been doing on Newsmakers or stream any of our other previous episodes, you can do that at WPR.org/newsmakers. Our program continues in a moment. This is Newsmakers from Wisconsin Public Radio. From Wisconsin Public Radio, this is Newsmakers. I'm Ezra Wall in our Southwest Bureau. Thanks for listening today. We're talking about the 70th State Assembly District in our election coverage today. In that district, the incumbent is Nancy Vandermeer, a Republican. She faces in this election John Baldus, a Democrat, on Tuesday, November 3rd. And Mr. Baldus has been talking with us, and our conversation with him continues. Let me ask you a question I've been posing to most of the candidates that we've talked to. You brought up the social unrest that we've been seeing in Wisconsin, indeed, but also throughout the country. So how will you work if you're chosen to lead this assembly seat? How will you work to make sure that minority voices have a seat at the policy table?
Yeah, that's a great question. And it's the opportunity to be there, to be able to listen and to be at the table and to have open ears, and ultimately being able to listen to the different groups that can help us create the new solutions that we do need. It's apparent when you see a gentleman who is, the police are called to an event. They show up, they taser him twice within 5 minutes, and the gentleman has 3 children in the car. And however that transpired, he's walking to get it back into his car, evidently, and 7 shots are left in the back, in his back. The following night, you have a gentleman walking down the street with a long rifle past curfew hours, and he's able to do what he did and be able to walk away. And what occurred was shooting 2 other individuals, killing 2 other individuals, and shooting a third in the arm. So being able to listen, not being able to prejudge, to be able to say, yes, we do need change, that there are wrongs that have been committed by those in charge, and to be able to create accountability for those individuals and for the communities is needed. And so to sit here and say that I have all the solutions and answers right now, I don't. But I think it's the willingness to listen and ultimately doing the right thing for the constituents in the state of Wisconsin.
I want to focus on the economy because a lot of what's been going on during this period of unrest in our country is that people are talking about not having a seat at the economic table, and there are others indeed who have faced very difficult challenges. Wisconsin's farmers are having a tough couple of years. We've seen manufacturing jobs leave our country, and other reasons that people are falling on hard times, not to mention COVID-19, which closed essentially most of our businesses for at least a period of time in this year. Taking a look at your district that you're seeking to represent, what do you see happening there economically, and what is it going to take to make sure that it either gets headed in the right direction or stays headed in the right direction?
It's hard for me to see what goes on across the district because of my work schedule and because I'm trying to run a grassroots campaign that is focused on fair maps. But from a manufacturing dairy state perspective, what issues we have been, you know, from fair trade and the divisions that we've created from a federal level down to the state level. And with the COVID, you add all of these situations, you put them together, and it creates, you know, the tinderbox that we're in, and it creates difficulties for our manufacturers. Going back, you know, we've been able to lower the tax rate that manufacturers pay to put them in a more competitive standpoint. You know, right now as a manufacturer, if you're competing in the international marketplace, you have difficulty to try to access that marketplace because you're not able to travel. How is it that we can work with our Wisconsin Economic Development Corporation, work with DATCAP to help put farmers and our manufacturers in a position to work with international markets and within markets that are here in the state? How can we get the products that we have to market? But it's also having a skilled workforce and investing in that workforce, investing in the education infrastructure, and ensuring that our children, as they graduate high school and move into either secondary education or into the workplace, are prepared for that. And so, focusing on education, focusing on providing the citizens with the right tools for the manufacturers and be able to and the farmers to be able to. To be able to hire that group in, whether it's through apprenticeships, whether it's through internships or work programs and layering it with education. There's a number of things that we can do. And again, I don't have all the answers, but again, it's being able to listen and a willingness to work with Wisconsin Manufacturing Commerce, with the Wisconsin Farm Bureau, and partnering with them to ensure that we're creating an environment that helps our manufacturers, helps our farmers grow from this pandemic. We need to be able to invest in ourselves.
Education has been a tricky subject this year as schools decide what's best in each individual district, in-person learning or distance learning or some hybrid combination thereof, whether we should or shouldn't have athletics going on at the moment, and all these different questions that some people talking about how the absence from school might affect our children long term. Some people talking about how the focus on international health issues that they may not completely understand could have a negative impact on their, you know, development or psychology or what have you. Talk about some of these issues and what you would like to see happen in our school system, especially those issues that might be influenced by the state legislature.
Well, as we go into the school year this year, our legislative majority, 46 of them, signed a letter sending it to our school administrators, indicating their wish to have students back in school. And we all want our kids back in school. I see with my own two children and different dynamics between the two of them. But then I think about their classmates that may not be in an area where they have internet reception. You know, how were they impacted last spring, as the schools, as we moved to distance learning from home. And And going into this school year, we haven't created any new solutions. We have the status quo, what we had as we went in, as they adjourned in the spring. We have the same conditions here in the fall. And school districts are, aside from the guidance from DPI, are making the decisions themselves. We just had the announcement that Stevens Point Area High School is not going to be having fall sports. As a former football coach, soccer coach, football player, my senior year was I can't begin to imagine what the children are going through and how it will impact them psychologically and emotionally through this year. And it's not just the student, the athletes. It's those that participate in all the other activities and the clubs and the camaraderie and friendships that are grown from that. And so while in the Stevens Point Area High School, we have an alternating schedule, there were no other solutions being provided that I was able to see for those children that are out in rural areas. And how are we getting to those students? And how will we ensure that their education, that they'll have a success going into the future? And so I think from a Wisconsin legislative standpoint, it's understanding where are those gaps that we have. And we can understand that by looking at the, you know, Wi-Fi signals and working with the communication companies, the AT&Ts and the Verizons of the light, to be able to get the tools into their hands. And we just haven't seen any of that. And so what are the questions that need to be asked and answered? We see very, very little inaction from this legislature. And I think if we have a legislature that is accountable to the voters, we would see much more action, you know? And so when we talk about fair maps, for me, a lot of it comes back to fair maps that our current legislators don't have to answer to the constituents of the entire district, just a small portion of the district of what they see as their majority. And that gives them the opportunity to have an action. And so when we say that fair maps may not be an issue, for me, it really comes back to an issue of fairness and representing all of the citizens of the district and the state.
So in the couple of minutes, we really have a little less than 2 minutes remaining. But in that amount of time, why don't you tell people sort of the snapshot of why they should potentially choose John Baldus as their candidate of choice on November 3rd, rather than the incumbent Nancy Vandermeer?
I want to work for every constituent, regardless of party affiliation, regardless of where you're at in the district, regardless of your skin color. And not to say that Representative Vandermeer doesn't, but I have signed the pledge for fair maps. We are going into a legislative cycle where legislative districts will be redrawn. And I believe that needs to be done in a fair and open process. And I believe that Governor Evers has made the right decision to call his nonpartisan commission to help draw those maps. I have a commitment to work on fair maps for the state. Beyond that, I have a commitment to listen to my constituents, to take time to understand each of the issues that is impacting them, and to be an independent Democrat, not to toe the party line, to be there to work across the aisle, to try to create some camaraderie and conversation with the party on the other side of the aisle, as we say, working across the aisle. If anybody has known me throughout my life, I've always tried to be fair. I've always tried to be friendly with folks and to understand that we have differences of opinions. And while we may have differences of opinions, we can set those aside and be able to work towards a common goal. And we just don't see that right now in our legislature. So my hope is that we can get to a place where our legislators are again working across that aisle, communicating with one another for the goodwill of our state, so that we can move forward instead of bickering, partisanship, and what ultimately, as I see, is somewhat stagnation here in Wisconsin.
John Baldus is the Democratic candidate for Assembly in the 70th District. John Baldus, thank you very much for joining us.
No, thank you. I really appreciate the time, Ezra.
And this is Newsmakers from Wisconsin Public Radio. A note about our program today, Representative Nancy Vandermeer, the Republican incumbent in the 70th Assembly District here in Wisconsin. Wisconsin, opted not to be interviewed for today's show. We had multiple points of contact with her campaign, with her official legislative office, and with her county Republican Party. And in spite of our communiques, she did not reply to any of our inquiries. Remember, if you'd like to find out more about our show or to hear the interviews that we have been able to get with all of the other candidates running for Assembly and Senate in our area, you can find those at our website. That's WPR.org/newsmakers. Back in just a moment, this is Newsmakers from Wisconsin Public Radio. It's Newsmakers on Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Ezra Wall in our Southwest studio in La Crosse. Thank you very much for tuning in. Another election-focused show today. We heard earlier from one of the candidates in the 70th Assembly District, and we add that to our list of many, many candidates that we've heard from this election season. And now we turn our attention to the actual process of voting, how you can get the information that you need, and why it's important to engage in that civic opportunity and, in fact, responsibility. Joining us again on Newsmakers is Chris Haskell, who's with the League of Women Voters of the La Crosse area. Chris, thank you very much for joining us on Newsmakers.
Oh, thank you for having me back. I'm glad to be here.
Yeah, we're always glad to talk to the League, and especially Election Day is right upon us, just a couple weeks away now, as opposed to the last time we talked. So everybody's familiar with the race at the top of the ticket. Boy, you can't get away from that news these days. But there are many other reasons in terms of races to vote in your local state elections, many reasons for people to go to the polls on November 3rd. Talk about what else we're going to see besides just that presidential race.
Exactly. And I think that this is a prime year with examples of that. So if you look at the protest in the streets, including those in La Crosse, and you look at our health care concerns, and our children in, or in many cases, not in school, but trying to do school from home. Those are all decisions that are made on the local level, and it just brings home to you why it's really important to vote down ticket, whether that be the state level or the local level. All those races are critically important.
And there are races. I remember looking at the ballot not long ago, and there are races for Congress. Not only that, races for Senate within our listening area. There are two races for Senate that are going on this time around. Also within our listening area, a number of races for state assembly. I think we've covered seven or eight of them here on Newsmakers, and then local races for different positions as well. So a lot to choose from as people take a look either at their absentee ballot or go to the polls in person. And that brings me to my next question, which is often people show up at the poll if they choose to vote in person, or they get that absentee ballot and look at it for the first time, and they're kind of, wow, I knew two or three of these races were up here, but I don't know how to do all the information getting that I need to on some of the candidates. So is there a common source that the League of Women Voters is sending people to in terms of where they can get candidate information?
Yes, and thank you for asking that. The League has a website called vote411.org, and you can go literally anywhere in the country. You can get on that website and get information about the candidates. You put in your personal information as far as your address, and then you can find out information about the candidates. And I think it's a great source. They'll have, if there are two or three candidates running for a race, they'll have the answers, assuming the candidates respond. They'll have the answers in columns, so you can just cross-reference all of their answers about the things that you're concerned about. You can also go on the My Vote website, which is one of our main tools in the state of Wisconsin, and you can find out what's on your ballot. So if, just as you said, you get there and you say, oh, geez, I didn't know all this was going to be on my ballot, well, you can definitely check that out ahead of time on myvote.wi.gov.
And if you have the internet access necessary to either look at the Vote411 website or the MyVote website, if you need more information about the candidates, you know, I mean, you're already online, just Google it, look it up, copy and paste that name and see what comes up and what information you can find. So which of those sites would I use if I want to find where my polling place is? I know within walking distance of my house, there's 3 or 4 different polling places, and some people might get confused as to which one they're supposed to show up to.
We actually both sites will do that, but in the state of Wisconsin, we refer people to the MyVote site. It has so much information, yes, about where your polling place is, but we're also really encouraging people this year. You know, it's no longer the year of, oh, that's right, I got to remember to vote on November 3rd. This is the year of, I have to have a plan. There's different ways I can vote this year, and I need to decide how I'm going to vote, and that my vote site can really help you with deciding from among, do I want to vote with the absentee ballot? Do I want to go in early to my municipal clerk's office and vote between the 20th and the 30th? Or do I want to go on election day on November 3rd? But what you asked me is where can I find my polling place? And that's on my vote.
You talked about all the different ways that people can vote in Wisconsin. Is the League of Women Voters making a particular recommendation to people?
I don't think we're necessarily recommending one way or the other. I work with both the League of Women Voters and the Driftless Voter Coalition, and we've been out talking to people. And I feel like our job is just to be sure that everybody's aware of all their options. This year, of course, the absentee ballot has come more into play. I've talked to more people who said, well, I just never considered doing that. And I don't think, even though they had the right to do it, and you don't have to have a reason, you haven't had to have a reason in the past. It's just been, of course, since COVID that people have really come to the realization that, oh, that's a real viable option. So I feel like our job is just to be sure that people are aware of their options. You know, a lot of people will say to us, oh, no. Well, actually, we were at Riverside Park last week, and I would say most people said, oh, I've already voted. So obviously they were absentee ballot. Then other people would say, oh, no, I like to go in and vote. But this year, because of COVID, I'm going to go in early, so it's more spaced. And then there are other people who say, I love the tradition of going in on election day, so I'm going to go in on November 3rd.
So as this program airs, we're heading into the second full week of October, still about 2 weeks and a few days away from election day. So is there still time? If somebody hasn't requested their absentee ballot yet, is there still time for that process for the request to be made, the ballot to be sent, you know, them to fill it out and either mail it back or drop it at the clerk's office? Is there still time for that process to happen?
There would still be time. There's definitely still time to request the absentee ballot, and the turnaround on getting that should get it to you before the election. We would say that if you have not put your ballot in the mail by the 20th, that you should drop it in or walk it in. So you have the three options, drop it in, walk it in, mail it in. And a lot of people are saying even now, well, I just like to drop it in. I just want to go in and see for myself that I'm dropping it in that secure drop box. Or, oh, geez, I just live a few blocks from my municipal clerk, and I like to ride my bike over and take it in and hand it to my clerk. So those are options. But we would say if you're not ready to mail it in by the 20th, then you should consider one of the first two options and not mail it in.
I want to look at voter registration. How far in advance does somebody have to be registered to vote in order to qualify to cast a ballot?
Well, and that's another wonderful thing. In the state of Wisconsin, you can actually register to vote on Election Day. So there's two ways you register to vote. One is online. That process ends on the 14th of October. I should just make a caveat here, by the way things are changing with rulings, things can change. But as of right now, you can register online up through the 14th of October. That's a very simple process if you have a Wisconsin driver's license, permit, or state ID. You can also register when you would go in to early vote on the 20th or the 30th, or you can go into your municipal clerk's office and register. And if you don't get that done and it's November 3rd, you can register at the polls on November 3rd.
And is there a residency requirement for example, how long you have to have lived at your current place of residence in order to qualify to register?
Yes, and that just changed. It used to be 10 days, and now it's 28 days. But if you have not lived for 28 days in the place where you're living on November 3rd, you can vote from your other address. So if you move just from across the border in Minnesota or something, but you're not going to be here for 28 days, you can go back and vote at your previous address.
So nobody should be denied the opportunity to vote in that regard. It's just a matter of determining which place is the proper place for you to cast your ballot.
Right. And also we're very cognizant of the post-secondary students that we have in town now and how in flux their lives are, as are all of our lives, and some of them are moving to live in residence halls and then having to move home or whatever. So that's different for them. They can count their permanent address as their 28 days. So if you would have a student at TC or Viterbo or UWL and something should happen that things would get closed down and they would have to go home and it hasn't been 28 days, that's still okay.
One of the things that you used to hear a lot, and maybe you hear it just as much now during, COVID and while people are determining whether it's safe to be out and about, is that, the question about how much one vote really matters. I guess I won't worry with it because my one little vote isn't going to make that big a difference. What's your response to people who think that their one little vote doesn't matter?
Well, first of all, there are multiple examples of elections across the country through the years that were decided on very small margins. You can find elections that ended up in a tie and they had to do a coin toss. Our own local election between Jennifer Schilling and Dan Kopanky was extremely close. And plus, every person that says, "Oh, my vote doesn't matter," that can have a cumulative effect. So if it's just one person in the state of Wisconsin that says that's one thing. But if you get when you start multiplying that, of course, it has an effect. Plus, I feel like that's your chance to say what's on your mind and vote for the things that matter to you. So do it for yourself too.
Yeah, it's part of. In our introduction, I referred to it as a civic opportunity, a civic responsibility, as a lot of people would say. Not that anybody has to do it, but it really is the official way for citizens to have their voice heard.
Right, exactly. And I like that. The way you phrase that with opportunity, yes, it is definitely your opportunity to get to the polls and vote for the people who you think will carry out the things that you believe in.
So a quick time out here and our conversation will continue. But before we do that, I want to give an opportunity to mention again the two websites that you mentioned earlier. First, let's start with the one that's affiliated with the League of Women Voters, the voter information site that the League has.
That's vote411.org.
And then there's another website that is the main voter hub from the state of Wisconsin. And what's that web address?
That's myvote.wi.gov.
We're speaking with Chris Haskell, who is a member of the League of Women Voters of the La Crosse area, a board member with that organization. Also, Chris is active with the Driftless Voter Coalition, and we're going to be talking more about the upcoming election, the involvement of the League of Women Voters, and how you yourself might be able to get involved. That's as our conversation continues here on Newsmakers. You can find more about our program. You can see all of the interviews that we've done with our candidates for office at our website, wpr.org/newsmakers. This is Newsmakers from Wisconsin Public Radio. This is Newsmakers from Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Ezra Wall in our La Crosse studios. Thanks for tuning in as we continue our conversation with Chris Haskell, representing the League of Women Voters today. And there's been some get out the vote efforts and voter awareness efforts that you've been involved with through the League and the League's partnership with the Driftless Voter Coalition. Talk about some of the efforts that you've undertaken this year to make sure that people know the why and wherefore of the November 3rd election.
Yeah, my gosh, it really, we really had to do an about-face and figure out how to do things. So it's been exciting that we've been trying new things. In the past, we just would have mostly gone to events and registered tons of people, and that was wonderful, too. But now we're not so inclined to do that. So some of our most recent endeavors, we had a door-hanging event a couple weeks ago where we hung 3,800 doors with a flyer that was just basic information, some of the stuff we were talking about earlier with the websites. And so that was a wonderful event. We looked at the 11 wards that we felt historically were underrepresented in voting, and we had 35 volunteers from the League and Driftless, and we partnered with the local Unitarian Church on that, the UUs, and so that was a great day. This Saturday, we're going to have another unique event, something we've never done before. We're going to have a car caravan throughout the city. So we're going to invite people, and certainly anybody that's listening that wants to join us can. We're going to decorate some cars with some voting messages, and we're going to drive around through town, again, just making sure that everybody's aware that there's an election coming up, and we encourage everyone to vote. And we probably will be wandering through those same 11 wards that we did the door hanging on, so that will be fun. Driftless also has partnered with the League, and we've been doing what I would call pop-up events. So we were at the City Hall Farmers Market one Saturday, a good portion of the day that the market was up, and talked to people there. We were at Riverside Park last weekend in shifts, and we will be at the co-op Friday. They've given us permission, which is wonderful, to set up outside of the co-op. We'll be talking to people, and then we'll be at Copeland Park. So we're just trying to get out there and just making sure, as I said, our real emphasis this year is you've got to have a plan. What's your plan? Is there anything we can do to help you to follow through on your plan?
It's so interesting to hear you talking about people decorating their vehicles and driving kind of parade style, really, through neighborhoods, encouraging people to get out to vote. And it's interesting to see that kind of awareness effort going on in a nonpartisan fashion. You would expect it from somebody pushing for a particular policy change, a ballot initiative, or obviously somebody actually running for office or supporting someone who's running for office. Talk about that history of nonpartisanship of the League of Women Voters and why that's so important.
Yes, thank you. That's an important part of what we do. We are strictly nonpartisan. We have we take some stands, some issues, but everything that we do has to be, and we want it to be, nonpartisan. So we're talking to all kinds of people, but we're not talking about who you're voting for. We're only talking about how you can vote and how we can help you vote.
As the league's going about its activities and people are hearing how they might be involved or hearing ideas and think, I might like to get involved in that. You mentioned that people can join in the caravan if they're interested in doing that. But how can people who want to be involved with the League of Women Voters on a more official basis find that information and maybe become members?
Well, you can either go to our website or you can email us. I'm just looking at, so our email is lalwv.gmail. So you can email us or you can go to our website. We also have a Facebook page. So there's lots of ways to contact us. Or if you see us out and about, certainly come up to us and just ask us about joining. That would be great.
And what about your membership? It's not just women anymore, is it?
No, it's not women, just women anymore. Actually, a couple presidents ago, or the president of our local chapter was a man, and we do have men who are very involved. It started out as being a women's organization, which formed right after women got the right to vote. So after the suffragist activities were kind of winding down, then the League of Women Voters, including in La Crosse, the League of Women Voters of La Crosse is almost 100 years old, started. But yes, we definitely welcome men to join us.
You talked about the caravan. You talked about pop-up events and different ways that the league is active in the community. Not just affiliated with this election, though. What are the different ways that somebody can expect to be asked to participate if they were to become more active with the League of Women Voters?
Oh, right. Thank you. So if you're not so inclined to be doing the outdoor events at this time or any time, we certainly like people to join us to work on. So, for instance, the Vote 411 website, that takes input from every local league. So the La Crosse Area League of Women Voters has a committee that works on that website with getting local candidates' information on them. That's something we'd welcome help with. We write letters to the editor. There's going to be a series of candidate debates coming up, and we need timers. So there's really all different kinds of things that you can do. And actually, we are moments away from having a new website come up that will have a volunteer tab on it, and you can look at that volunteer tab and find out about all different kinds of things that you can do. So go to our website and just check us out and see what things are available there.
And we've mentioned every other web address under the sun, but I haven't given you a chance yet to mention yours. What's the website for the League of Women Voters of the La Crosse area?
It's lwvlacrosse.org.
lwvlacrosse.org. We've been speaking with Chris Haskell from the League of Women Voters of the La Crosse area. Chris, thank you very much for joining us again on Newsmakers.
Oh, thank you, Ezra. It was a pleasure anytime.
And this is Newsmakers from Wisconsin Public Radio. Remember, if you'd like to hear part of this program again, or if you'd like to stream on demand any of our previous episodes, including all the political coverage we've been having for the last several weeks, you can find them at our website. It's WPR.org/newsmakers. You can find us in a lot of different podcasting apps. Open your favorite, search for Newsmakers, and see if we're there and hit subscribe. We'd love to have you subscribe to our podcast. Remember, there's a few opportunities for you to hear the show each week. We're on Fridays at 10 a.m. on the Ideas Network 90.3, with a repeat at 7 p.m. on 88.9 WLSU. And on Saturday, if you're an early riser, join us at 5 a.m. on Saturday on 88.9 WLSU. For John Davis and Dawn Jewell, I'm Ezra Wall. Please join us next time for the next Newsmakers right here on Wisconsin Public Radio.